warm welcome to the Blue Team Podcast, your weekly unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. This week we'll be looking ahead to what could be classed as a season-defining game, give an insight into David Robertson's new management team, and it's all over for England once again. Did we enjoy it? Of course we did. Yes, welcome along to what is the penultimate episode of the Blue Team Podcast for 2022. The festive period is fast approaching. With me, as ever, me, Colin Byers, is Martin Smith with his cup of cocoa, trying to keep himself warm. How are we this week?
Frozen, absolutely frozen. It's minus six here. As we were just speaking about a minute or two ago, we've seen it cold, but it's been a while since we've seen it this cold for so long as well, given that it sort of started Friday, Saturday. So, yeah, it was a slight blessing that there wasn't a game on Saturday. It's cold, but the best of time, never mind in this sort of weather.
Well, it was supposed to have cleared by the weekend, but it seems to have, they've extended the weather warning until Thursday new as well. So hopefully that Disney carry on until Saturday, because it could be cold on Saturday, but for a big game like that, it might be just the tonic that we need to keep us warm.
We might need to go into the bar just slightly earlier to get a heat up, maybe go there Friday night.
just beat the traffic, you mean?
Beat the traffic, yes. Absolutely.
Right, so I obviously, no game for us to sort of chat about, because obviously there wasn't a game on Saturday, free weekend. Did you use the free weekend productively? Was it of use?
Well, it was Christmas shopping.
Everybody else was Christmas shopping as well, I think.
Define if that was good use or not. The bank account is a lot lighter, but the better half is happy with the purchases. So, I mean, it's a win-win situation from our point of view, but for mine, I'm now skint.
Okay, so it'll just be a half shandy on Saturday then, will it?
Payday is Thursday.
It's even better.
All's well that ends well.
Obviously, I was the same. Enjoyed the Christmas shopping, and I say enjoyed. That's obviously in its loosest term.
You cannot enjoy Christmas shopping. If you are male out there and you enjoy doing Christmas shopping, oh, hats off to you. Because we went round Aberdeen. We were for about 4 or 5 hours. Absolute pandemonium. Chaos.
Well, we didn't go to Aberdeen. I just refuse to go to Aberdeen.
Yeah, I've been putting it off for so long. I put in socials the other week, the Christmas tree. I waited until December for, and she's like, well, we'll go to Aberdeen, do our Christmas shopping. Put it off long enough. We did it on Saturday. Wow. That's it for another year.
I know. World Cup as well. I've got to mention that. I obviously watched the exploits at the weekend. Did enjoy England getting pumped on Saturday night. Good. So obviously the Christmas shopping was done and dusted. Then we got to watch England getting pumped, which is obviously made up for the lack of a Peterhead game on Saturday.
Yeah, it was good to watch a game. I thought that'd be fair after the Christmas shopping. It was good to sit down and watch football. But I didn't think it was as entertaining as Argentina and Holland the night before. That's maybe down to the referee. I think he booked about 55 people and cause a wee bit of a star, shall we say. But yeah, I think the World Cup's been good. Again, there's been a lot of controversy over it and, you know, whatever you think of it. But I think the tournament as a whole, there's been a few scalps. Well, it depends what you call a scalp. I think Morocco getting through to where they're at. I don't care much about Morocco as a team personally, but I would say it's a scalp them getting the semi-final. Croatia doing well, and also you've got France and Portugal as well. So yeah, I think the tournament's been good. It's been good to watch a wee bit of football whilst we've had a wee sabbatical of the League One duties.
I have to say, I agree. I've enjoyed the World Cup. I wasn't anticipating enjoying it, and then I kind of thought it was to do with, you know, it because it was the middle of the season, or it was the sort of controversies running about Qatar getting it. But I wasn't looking forward to it. I wasn't really looking forward to any of the matches. But, you know, once it sort of got going, it has been quite good. And a lot of good games, a lot of good high-scoring games as well. And as you said, there's a few shocks happened through the tournament as well.
Yeah, like I said, it's good to see. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I did sort of miss the 10 o'clock and the 1 o'clock games when it went down to the last games and the knockouts. But yeah, like I said, I think the tournament's been good, regardless of the background, which is important to note, the background of it. But like you, a wee bit sceptical going into it, but now that it's really flourishing, yeah, I've enjoyed it.
Averaging 2.6 goals a game. And that's with 6 nil-nils in the group stage as well. Because I think it was like the third or fourth game where there was a nil-nil, and then you thought, oh, well, here we go. That's the kind of the standard the yeah. groups is going to go. But no, I think soon after that, I think Spain had won their game 7-0. So it's been a lot of good games, and good to see like Suarez ending his international career in tears and things like that.
Yeah, I've seen Ronaldo, he was in tears as well. There's a background story to that, the sportsmanship and whatever, however you think of it. But yeah, there's been a few shocks, I would say. I certainly think, like I said, Morocco getting as far as what they have done, whether you think Croatia getting as far as they've done, that'd be classed as a shock. But yeah, some of the big teams went out quite early on, and it sort of opened up the competition a wee bit.
I think Belgium was one of the ones that were tipped to do quite well.
They were poor.
They were poor, but I would say Roberto Martinez, as a manager, is probably one of the biggest myths in football at the minute. To have the squad of players at his disposal and to virtually do nothing with him just shows you how big a myth he really is.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't stand out. He's one of the top managers, in my opinion. I certainly think there's certainly quite a few people ahead of him. But as you said, with the team that he's got in Belgium, the players at his disposal, the quality, it's difficult to go out as early as they did, but he somehow managed it.
I mean, he didn't have the most sparkling a managerial career to even justify, you know, no. even being in the reckoning for the Belgian job. It was such a shock that he got it, and that he almost stumbled into it. And obviously, you know, you'd expect them to qualify for the major tournaments, but once he get to the major tournaments, he just doesn't seem to do anything. And I think him walking after they got knocked out was the only thing that could happen.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of managers over the last couple of days that have got knocked out of the tournament, and then that's the end of their international career. Looking slightly closer at home, you know, I think England, there's a few folk wanting Southgate to go. There's some people wanting him to stay. Be interested to see what England do if they class themselves as the so-called big nations and a nation that wants to be winning things. Is Gareth Southgate the man to take them forward? A lot of questions, very little answers.
And it's been pointed out when you mentioned England and Gareth Southgate. Yes, they can beat the USA's, the Senegals, the Wales's quite comfortably. When it comes to the so-called teams, the bigger teams, the bigger nations, they always crumble.
Yeah, I've seen something, a list of England games from 2018, and once they hit a so-called big nation, that is when things sort of unravel and they don't have answers for it. Sometimes it can be a mental block thing when you come up against big teams, but for it to happen so often, you know, you've got to look at the quality of English players and the coaching staff, the manager. Is that the right team to, you know, the right management team to be taking them forward?
And I do enjoy, normally I don't enjoy listening to the England commentary, Sam Matterface and Lee Dixon, but you get a little bit of a joy just to hear the tears in their voice after a game like that.
Yeah, I didn't listen to that. I heard that they were the commentary team. It went off, but I just think it's the protruding of the arrogance that goes with it as well. They almost, I think there was a comment I seen that they'd said it was a missed opportunity because in Morocco in the next round, or they could have had Morocco in the semi final. And I think that just shows that. Probably the media that's more guilty of it. I don't think the players and the manager come out for England and really say it. I think it's more the media themselves, but they really don't help themselves in that case.
Well, that was, I think it was Sky, who put a graphic up saying this is England's route to the final, and they haven't even gotten out of the group. Yeah, obviously they did go in and win the group, but there is that arrogance to the, and that's why I would say the vast majority of people in out with England or take a little bit of delight in seeing them fail.
Yeah, I think it was Gareth No, Gary Neville, even, sorry. He put out a tweet saying it was the worst refereeing performance he'd ever seen and shouldn't be anywhere near the tournament. I think sour grapes is an understatement there. Like,
and a few penalty shooters as well. And I want to mention the Spain's horrendous penalties when they got knocked out. You've got a penalty shootout in a World Cup and you've got the three takers and they're virtually just trying to pass the bar into the net. Seemingly, they practice 1,000 penalties prior. If that's how they've practiced, then they should all be going back to the drawing board, because those penalties were horrendous.
Yeah, they weren't good. I'm old fashioned with the penalties. You put your laces through it, you pick a spot, and you make sure that keeper's going to have to make a darn good save. I'm not a fan of the slow run ups, the jitters, the that's fancy stuff. Panenkas are good to see, but when it doesn't come off, you look a bit of a fool. To me, penalty shootouts, you just put your laces through and make sure it's on target and make the keeper work. But I think there has been a few penalty shootouts that teams have tried to be. Would it be overconfidence that they try and do skillful things at penalties? Just put your laces through it and make sure you score.
I think it was the very next day there was a tweet of an old Julian Dix penalty doing the rounds.
Oh yeah,
and he just absolutely smashed it in the top corner. And that's what you need. That it's a penalty. Yeah. You've got to try and beat the keeper. They make the keeper fight, because you do end up looking stupid.
Yeah, I mean, some penalties, they're good when they come off if you're doing Panenkas and all that sort of thing, the slow run-ups and, just passing it to the side and the keeper moves one way and you go the other. It all looks good, but, first and foremost, make sure you score your penalty. And there has been a few poor penalties throughout the tournament.
So we're down to the final four then. My prediction of a Brazil-Argentina final, obviously, was well gone. Who's your pick? Who's going to be winning the final on Sunday?
Well, looking at the teams I left, I can only see Argentina, to be honest. It's no disrespect to other teams. I think Portugal, they look, it's weird, I think Portugal now look better without Ronaldo in their team, a wee bit like Man United. There's maybe a pattern there, but yeah, interesting. I can't see past Argentina.
You picking Portugal?
They're not even in it, so that can win. I've totally completely lost my train of thought.
Croatia,
aye. Somebody went past the window and it caught my eye, and I've completely lost my train of thought. I'll try and waffle past it. You're trying to. Oh, your editing skills, Colin, I'm sure this will look fantastic in the edit. If this is left in, you can have that one as well. Christmas bloopers. That's out next week as well.
That's a blooper reel for the summer.
But so, with a slight pause. And it's Argentina.
Yeah, so you're picking Argentina. In the end, you're picking Argentina.
You're going there
at the end. Yeah, well, I think I'm going to go with France. I'm going to stick with France, because I never picked France the whole tournament, so we'll go with them.
Oh, so what could go wrong? Yeah, it's for me, Argentina. I think they're looking good, they look strong. I was impressed with their performance against Holland, so yeah, even with France on it, so I think Argentina.
Okay, we'll see how that goes, if our predictions are as good as they are for a League One game.
Well, yeah.
One other debate, I guess, we're going to have. You've put out a tweet about celebrations.
Yes.
And getting on the bounty debate. I think you've got a poll that's maybe just about finished now, is it?
If you bear with me, yeah, so it has actually finished. After 205 votes, 56.6% have said no, it is not the worst selection within a tub of celebrations.
And do you,
controversial.
Do you agree? No, I take it you don't
agree. I don't agree. it was, to me, it is the worst one. And it was a debate over the weekend. A few folks said, I don't mind the bounties. I was like, what? How do you like the bounties? And I thought, you know what? There's only one way to settle this, and it's a Twitter poll, a good old-fashioned Twitter poll. It's the best way to settle it. And, after 205 votes, it looks like I am in the minority who think it is. Yeah, I mean, someone, Twix was mentioned, Snickers.
I can't see how anybody would say a Twix was the worst team, like.
If I can remember the comment, it wasn't the worst one, but they would quite easily have a bounty over a Twix. That's all wrong. All wrong. I'll put a tweet later on telling you my top the top list, and Bounty is certainly bottom.
Oh, well, I've got a Bounty in my top two.
And that ends this week's podcast. Top two. So, behind, okay, right, let's have your list.
Behind, well, it, obviously, top is Maltesers.
You know what, it's not often I'll ask this, but can we have this as the this week's episode, the topic of what is your, you know,
oh,
your,
yes, yes, yes,
people, I, you know, favourite away ground, Gary. I want people's list of celebrations in order, please.
Their top eight, because there is eight. Well, I've written down eight, I'm assuming there is eight.
They're seven plus a Bounty.
So I've got Maltesers, Bounty, Twix.
Oh, wow.
Galaxy, Milky Way, Galaxy Caramel, Mars, and then Snickers.
Galaxy Caramel, third lap. What?
I'm a simple man that likes simple things.
Then a Bounty's at number two. Well, I'm genuinely interested to hear people's comments now. I want to know the ranking from 1 to 8 on celebrations.
You're getting quite wound up about it, because you're finding folk to agree with you.
Surely there's got to be somebody in the comments that would agree that Bounty's got to be last.
We'll put that out. What is your opinion on the selection in our celebrations? And you can at them and tell them about these. What you think about the Bounties.
I'll be keeping a close eye over the next 48 hours.
to which point you'll be switching off your mentions halfway through.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Don't come at me in the bar on Saturday if you don't agree with the selection.
And if Ken comes out with a boxer celebration, just as we are, I sort that lot out.
Yeah.
Right, we should get round to talking some Peterhead news ahead of potentially the biggest game of the season, which we'll come on to later. A couple of bits of admin for last week. David Robertson has announced his backroom staff, although it wasn't officially mentioned by the club as yet. It was through the Press and Journal article on Thursday, and it's Ian Esselment who will be his assistant manager, and Jimmy Lindsay is also joining the coaching staff. Anybody that was at the game 2 weeks ago at Kelty would have obviously seen them there. I think the rumours were that it was going to be them anyway, but that's now been confirmed and done and dusted. As I said, it's not been confirmed by the club as yet. I'm assuming it is right. Good appointments. I think he's worked with them both as well, so he knows them. They know him, and it'll be interesting to see how that continues on, that working relationship, over the next few weeks.
Yeah, as you said, that they've worked together previously, so I think it's good that he's now got his backroom staff in place. I'm quite a fan that he's taken a few days to sort of come to his decision. He spoke to a few folk. And he's come up with the best team around him that he feels can help us get out of this run that we're in. So, hopefully they'll come in, they'll help Davey, and we can try and pick up results. And as you said, Saturday's probably the biggest game of the season, without a doubt. And you're hoping for a more positive reaction.
I mean, the rumour is that Scott Tate was due to be coming back as goalkeeper coach as well. However, Barry Thompson was there at the Kelty game, so we'll see what happens with that one. Barry's obviously been there unofficially this season since previous goalkeeper coach has left. So we'll wait and see if that is going to, you know, come about, that Scott's going to come in, or if it's Barry that's going to carry on.
Yeah, as you said, there was rumours of Scott coming back. We'll need to wait and see. As you said, Barry was there the other week. Good to get a bit of continuity with our goalkeepers. I've been highlighting it for about the last month. I think our goalkeeping situation has been left wanting a little bit, to be fair. I think it's fair on Tom himself. He's come under a bit of criticism. And, you know, part of it, I think, is justified somewhat, maybe slightly. I maybe have a wee bit pickle of it, but the lack of clean sheets is a concern, some of the decision making. But he's a young goalkeeper, and that will only come through time and experience, but hopefully a good goalkeeping coach can aid his development.
And if you look at what he said in the article in the PNG last week, he's still open to adding more coaches to his staff as well. It might not be an absolute priority at the minute. Obviously, the results on the park will be a priority. But you look at somebody like Jim Butter last year, who was obviously a goalkeeping coach, but he did quite a lot in terms of the set pieces and working with the players. So he wasn't just exclusively a goalkeeper coach, but he did two or three other different things as well. So it'd be interesting to see if Davey would want to go down that road of, well, goalkeeper coach, work with the goalkeepers. We've got a coach who can work with the players in the south, coach who can work with the players in the north, and maybe somebody who can do some set piece work as well.
Yeah, I think that would be a much better idea. Whether the budget allows and the financial constraints to go around it, it'd be brilliant to hear that sort of setup. I certainly think there's got to be something done with set pieces. It's been our bugbear for almost 4 years now, the podcast, that defending and attacking set pieces, it's a vital part of the game nowadays. It's important, and we just don't seem to be taking advantage of it in a way I think we should. So it'd be good to see somebody coming in who maybe could work with the goalkeeper and help with set pieces. But I certainly think that's part of the game now we really should be trying to home in on and take advantage of.
If you look at somebody like Jimmy Lindsay, his track record has been primarily working at youth level, youth coaching. Since he retired from playing, where he played for Motherwell, Ayr and Stirling Albion, and was also capped at the Scotland under 21 as well. And as I said, he's going into youth coaching at Raith Rovers, where he was an academy director, and moved to Malta, was a technical director there as well. So he's got a good background in terms of what the pedigree and working with younger players, which obviously is going to be good for the current crop of players that we've got at the minute at Peterhead. A lot of young players, a lot of young guys that maybe just haven't been coached in the right way, in the right manner in recent years.
Yeah, as you said, he's got the pedigree to come in and help us work to a lot of young players. If that is the route that Davey's going to go down, we've spoken about local players and young players coming through. It'd be brilliant to see. I think we're sort of crying out for that within the community. A lot of folk have said over the last couple of months it'd be good to see local players coming through. So, yeah, all these things, this isn't going to be something that happens overnight. This is something that's, you're laying the foundations for maybe something that could happen in 4, 5, 6 years' time. But it's good to see that the club and Davey himself has got plans to have that foundations laid.
And as I said earlier, he's worked with Davey before, both at Montrose and at Kashmir as well. So they've got that working relationship. And he said as well that both Ian and Jimmy may not always agree with what Davey wants, and he maybe doesn't always agree with them. But that is a good thing, because sometimes if you've got somebody who will always just be like a yes man, for example, that doesn't help a situation. Sometimes you need a difference of opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think if you've got a management team or trio that constantly agree on the same thing, you may as well just be doing it on your own, because obviously you're going to go with that decision anyway. I think it's healthy to hear a debate within the management team. I think, as you said, I think it's good that they've worked together previously. They know how each other work. I think that will be a good balance as well. Jim and Davey didn't always get on either. That should be pointed out. They often had debates on how things should be done, and I think that's the best way. As you said, if you've got a so-called yes man, that's not healthy for any club.
And Ian Esselman, he's obviously got a good coaching pedigree. It's particularly up in this area. He has been coaching since 1984, and he's been coaching the likes of Keith and Huntley Cove, and lastly was at Stonehaven as their manager up until 2018. He's officially, I guess, been retired, but he's been coaxed out of retirement by Davey. And I guess that's maybe the mark of Davey as a man, that Ian's willing to give up that almost life of luxury to come back and into a job which will be particularly taxing for him.
Yeah, I mean, if you're retired and you're coming out of a job, coming to Peterhead at the moment is certainly a massive challenge and task. And yeah, again, it shows the man, you know, the caliber of what Davey's like. He's been able to convince somebody to come on board and help him. Again, it's crucial these guys have worked together before. I think that will, to me, it can easily shave off 5-6 months of a process where you're getting to know each other as a management team, you're getting to know players. The fact that the management team know each other, they'll very quickly share ideas and opinions of what they think will work and won't work. You know, and that can only benefit us.
And by what we've heard or picked up already in the short space of time, that the training's has been good, it's been positive. They've enjoyed, the players have enjoyed the new ways of doing things. And obviously, if that continues, we would like to obviously then see that work onto the field, the playing field as well, because you know sometimes. Quite often, towards the end of Jim's tenure, you quite often got the line of, we did this quite well in training, or this player performed quite well in training, and then we still get thumped 3-0 or 4-0 on the Saturday. So it's all well and good at saying that the training's good and things like that, but then we need to start seeing this replicated on the field on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely. It was getting to the point I was considering going to training games on a Tuesday just to see us playing well, because it seemed to be every week in training we were good. You came up against that on match day, or you came to the match day and things unravelled. I think the training being positive and good, I think it's a good foundation. There's a lot of work to do. You know, even if you do win on Saturday, it's a stepping stone, it's a start, but you know we're a long way off where I think we should be. We've said it a few times, there is some quality within the team that we've got, and it's up to Davey and the management team to try and, you know, get that quality to shine through.
And it looks as though that he is starting to make the efforts to bring in more players in January and move players on. We spoke last week about Ola Adeyemo, his contract being terminated by mutual consent, I guess, I think it was. It was then classified, it was classed as being for personal reasons. Read the PNGA the day, and you see that actually Ola had been saying he's been injured since about August, and the new management teams have gone in there and never really gotten a head of Ola. He's been not returning any phone calls, so there was obviously someone, maybe it was happened previously under the other management team, but he's looking for players who are committed 100% to the clause and to the club, and that, if that means getting rid of players, then so be it.
Yeah, at this moment in time, the position we're in, you need players that are 100% committed. In this day and age, they return phone calls from their social media, there's everybody's got a mobile phone. You know, I think it's a lazy option, it's a poor excuse. Fair enough if you've been injured since August, but you would report that to the new manager and you would try and make some sort of effort, depending on what the injury was. Could you and Davey have come to an agreement? I think the fact that Davey's probably assessed the situation and gone, yeah, we'll cut ties and go, I think that's also an indicament as well, of where we're at. Like you said the other week, I think there could be a few occasions over the next couple of weeks where players are told thanks, but no thanks.
And that's, you know, he obviously picked up an injury, whether or not that injury, you know, has healed and he's ready to go, but he's just refusing to come back. We're not really keen, but the ties have been cut and that's the end of it. And as I said, he's now looking for players who are 100% committed. He is obviously targeting more forward players. Said last week, that's probably the hardest position to try and pick up players in January. You know, the contacts that he's got and the contacts that Ian Erselman has got, particularly in this area, should work well in trying to pick up, you know, a bargain or two.
The difficulty just now is everybody's on the hunt for that striker. Even more so in January, it's very difficult to do business. I think we're also at a crossroads now. Players might look at PIA and go, is it going to be a club that's in League 2? Is it going to be in League 1 next season? If you had maybe another 5 points on the board, 6 points, whatever, players might be more persuasive to come. I think it'll be difficult to get players in January. I know that the clubs already said players will need to leave. I think getting players in could be even trickier, trying to, you know, convince them more at the point. and also a striker. We're crying out for one. You know, Rusty's going to need help up there when he does come back in the new year. But it's going to be a very tall order.
It certainly will be a tall order, but I'm sure it's something that the three guys will be chomping at the bit to try and get fixed. And, you know, it all starts on Saturday.
Yeah, this is the biggest game of the season. You mentioned it right at the start. There's no hiding place in this one. I think it was the question was posed the other week, because was that a relegation? You know, are we now relegated? And I said, well, I'm sitting on the fence left of the Clyde game. To me, it's almost as clear as that. You win the game, you give yourself a chance, lose it. And the way things have gone this season, it's a massive uphill task.
So before we get on to that game, we'll discuss that in depth. If you haven't seen the social media or from the SPFL today, or in fact in recent days, they have been running a focus on the lower leagues, and that's the Championship, League One and League Two, and getting fans to write articles or pieces about their club. We were asked by SPFL to provide an article for Peterhead, obviously, and that's going up with various different things. As I said, other clubs have been doing it. They've been doing it in alphabetical order. So obviously, Peterhead being a P quite far down the list. I think it's... I think there's not many clubs it's left, but we're doing all 30. And it's good that they're focusing on the lower leagues, Championship, League One and League Two, because obviously there's no Premiership pitba. My only niggling thing is that this is something that they should be focusing on more often anyway. You know, treating the other 30 teams as well as they treat the top 12.
I think there should be much more things done to promote the lower league football. We spoke about this maybe 2 years ago through the pandemic and different things, but I think the way they advertise the game, there's some, you know, for argument's sake, Falkirk, Dunfermline, a League One game, that could easily be covered somewhere. There's all this rights that they kind of stream games at weekend. You know, they've got the blackout at 3 o'clock, they kind of stream things, kind of show it, unless it's through their own club website, TV. Just all things like that. It's, you know, and the way they promote the game, it just seems, there was a tweet a couple of weeks back, there was no Scottish top flight, so they did a piece on Rangers and Celtic, but yet there was, you know, the Championship, League One and League Two games that were going on at the time. It just seems, Scottish football seems to stop from the Premiership does. But I would like to see more things done. I think it's good to read other teams, you know, and I think you learn about other supporters as well. You know, you get their thoughts. There was the Party Thistle one that we've seen, their podcast guys and what they thought. And, you know, it sort of opens up your eyes to other aspects of the game that you maybe didn't see.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know kind of about you, but it was some of it was a bit difficult trying to get it on paper, like sort of what does the club mean to you and getting your five-a-side team and things like that. I know we discussed a five-a-side team previously, but I think it's one of those kind of things that it changes month to month or week by week, just depending on what your kind of thought process is. But it was a real privilege to be asked by them to get it done. And as I said, hopefully it's maybe opened the door for other things in the future.
Yeah, like I said, it would be good for the other clubs, Championship, League One, League Two, if there was this sort of thing more often. You know, it doesn't have to just be a break in the Scottish Premiership for it to happen. I'd like to see more. I think better build-up, better, you know, information on teams as well. Clubs can only do so much on their social media, but it'd be good for the SPFL to highlight better things as well.
You know, if I had the time and the money and the inclination, I think if I was able to have like a broadcasting company and try and get the broadcasting rights for Championship, League One and League Two, I think you would get quite a lot of people interested in that. Even if it was just like a weekly highlights package for all the games, and maybe having one live, one a month or something like that, I think genuinely people would be interested in that.
I don't think they realise how much appetite there is for the lower leagues. I think they just... There was it 7,000? Again, I go back to that game, Falkirk, Dunfermline, the other week, there's about 7,000. So there is, that's a League One game. There is an appetite in the lower leagues for something. It's crying out for it, really.
Right, talking of appetites for a big game, this is, as we said, and we kind of overstate how big a game this is for us. I hope we're not overplaying it, but I genuinely believe this is going to be the biggest game of our season so far. It'll give us an indication of where we're at and where we potentially could be going. It's home to Clyde on Saturday. Hopefully weather doesn't play a part and it gets cancelled, because that would just be absolutely horrendous. We obviously, at the position where we are, sitting bottom, Clyde are ninth, having lost to Kelty in our previous game. We now sit 13 points behind them. Is any chance of making it to eighth now gone? And we're now looking to try and secure ninth. If we lose this game, is it curtains for us?
I don't think we'll get eighth. I think that boat sailed when we got beat quite convincingly by Kelty. I certainly think that was one of the games, although it was Davy's first game, it was one of them you couldn't lose. We did 13 points. I think it's a playoff now between us and a shootout now between us and Clyde for the playoff. And I think Saturday's game, it is must win. We got to try and sugarcoat it. It's a must win game. If you've got any aspirations of trying to get ninth and then hit a playoff, you know, come April, May, then this is a game you have to win.
As I said, we're 2 points behind Clyde. They're nae in the best form. You know, I think they've won a game since August. If you look at the consequences, if we win this game, and that's a big if, we will obviously go above Clyde and go into ninth, and it'll be the first time we've come off the bottom of the table since the end of August. So that in itself, I don't know how psychologically people will sort of look at that and go, well, actually, you know, we've been really, really bad, but here we are, we're in ninth, and all of a sudden things might look a little bit better.
Yeah, the psychological factor will be huge, because as you said, we'll be off the bottom of the table. What worries me, and this is potentially the glass half empty, half full situation, a defeat, and it's 5 points. And where do you see them wins coming from? That's the flip side. I imagine Clyde will come up here with a game plan of keeping it tight and trying to hit Peter Head on the break, and knowing full well that as long as they avoid defeat, the gap will be no further than 2 points. And then I think they're going to go all guns blazing and try and win the game. I think it'll be quite a reserved approach from them. Us, on the other hand, we've got to go almost fully attacking. We've got to try and, you know, I think an early goal would be brilliant, but, you know, I'll take a 1-0 however it happens. But that psychological factor, you said, of coming off the bottom of the table, that can be understated as well. That could be massive.
I'm trying to be as positive as I can be, and we'll sort of have half an eye on Kelty's game as well, because they're at Queen of the South, which obviously, you know, for Queen of the South is a big game. They're only 3 points ahead of Kelty in the league table. So, you know, if we can get a win, go above Clyde, Kelty fail to win, we could then potentially cut that gap back down to 10 points again.
Yeah, I mean, that would be good. I think full focus for me will be on Clyde on Saturday. I just think, far do I see wins coming from? I mean, obviously January's around the corner, there could be a lot of change. It is a new management team, but I just think we've given ourselves, I've mentioned it a few weeks ago, I think we've given ourselves a wee bit too much today, but you've got to start somewhere. It needs to be a better performance than 2 weeks ago at Kilty. But, you know, Clyde and I exactly been brilliant, as you said, then I won since August. So, yeah, if there is ever a team to beat, you would think Clyde would be the one.
And you want to talk about sort of the worst case scenario, if you like, is obviously a Clyde victory opens that gap up to 5 points, and Kelty beating Queen of the South, then that makes it 16. 16 points is a massive, massive gap to have with just half the season to go. 5 points, potentially, for Clyde, we could obviously catch them as couple of victories, but from what we talked about, the psychological thing of winning and going above them, the psychological thing is losing to them, and that gap opening up, suddenly it becomes 5 points might look only like 5 points, but it made me feel like 10.
Yeah, we've said it a few times. If you're within one win, whether it be 3 points plus goal difference, if you're within that bracket, you always feel that team in ninth is touchable. But I think if you lose and it goes 5 points, you need to get two wins from somewhere, and Clyde need to lose that psychological factor as well. Even that could be a massive blow, and Clyde get the confidence going into their next game. We've done it. You know, it swings and roundabout. It's going to be tough, really tough. I mean, Clyde Arnage is going to come up and, like I said, open up and, you know, hey, a basketball game. It's going to be a hard, competitive game. But I think if we've got any aspirations of trying to finish ninth in that playoff position, then you have to win on Saturday.
And take into account as well how bad our goal difference is as well. I mean, that's an extra point against us as well. So you're looking at a five-point gap, which really is a net six-point gap.
Yeah. That's when I think it becomes, when you look at it, the psychological factor. That's probably bordering on, you know, being too much. I know it doesn't sound like much, it's two wins, but it's getting them wins, it's that confidence, the psychological thing, Clyde win, you've lost. I think that could be massive. But I think eighth position is too far for us even, you know, at this time of recording. But Clyde, if we win, I think we might be okay, but I think if you lose it, you're not hiding nothing.
Look at the possible team selection. Then at the Celtic game, we went to a back four. Willis Sibbe was at right back. Danny Strachan moved to a right wing position. Russell McLean obviously made his comeback, but it was off the bench. We sort of spoke about it last week in terms of, you know, we were expecting more changes to the lineup for the previous the previous lineup. Do you anticipate any more changes this time round?
Yeah, I think there'll be a few. I don't think Davey would have been overly satisfied with what he's seen at Kelty. I think having now that will have been four training sessions by the time we get round to Clyde on Saturday that he'll have had. I think he'll have wanted to put his end mark and things. I think there could be slight tactical tweaks, maybe slight where they, you know, the positional sense, players coming forward, players dropping deeper. I think that might be a tweak. But I think there will maybe be three, four, maybe go up to five changes, because I think he'll want to see a reaction.
Andy McDonald will obviously be suspended. Ryan Strachan, we anticipate, is still going to be out injured for with his fractured eye socket, I think it was. So we may see Danny Strachan revert back to right back and Enoch slotting in beside Jason Brown at centre half. There is a possibility that maybe Jack Wilkie moves into centre half, and then, you know, somebody else plays in at left back. So Mark Gillis come back as well. You know, Danny Strachan may play left back. Max Gillis might play left back as well. He does appear that he's going to prefer the back four other than the previous back five.
Yeah, I think that will probably be the route he goes down. I think you're probably more likely to have Max Gillis at left back, Danny Strachan right back. Not against it at all. I think Max, up until his concussion, was doing well. Granted, that was on the right side of the defence. He's got a good engine, willing to get up and doing. I think that's something we're going to need. I think we're certainly going to need the fullbacks to stretch the game. But it's trying to be, you know, tight at the back as well. We have leaked a fair amount of goals. That's something that really needs to be addressed pretty sharpish, whether he feels, Davey, that he needs to bring players in or whether he just needs to work with them closer on the training ground. Only he'll can at this moment in time. But you will never win games if you're going to concede soft goals like we're doing.
And you mentioned Jordan Brown after the Kelty game, and he's since continued to stand by what he said was he felt he was the best player on the park that day. You'd imagine he would continue on getting his second start in a row, possibly up front alongside Michael Hewitt, maybe. Or if Rust is available and fit, you know, or even is it a possibility that, you know, if we can get 60 minutes out of him, you know, he really should be starting.
Yeah, if you can get at least 45 minutes out of Russell McLean, then I think he's got to start on Saturday. It's the biggest game. You've got here your best players. I think also him, Jordan playing, I think somebody that's been around the coaching setup. You know, he's been with that team for a long time now. Obviously, all the changes in the summer. I think it'll be good to pay that link between the management team and the players on the pitch. If you've got Jordan in there, it's a lot easier to get information across. You can respond to things quicker, and then a lot of finer details could be crucial.
Obviously, we've mentioned how big the game is going to be. I would like to think that in terms of the two sides, you know, it's not a relegation 6 point by any stretch of the imagination, but it is a big game. You would like to think the crowd would reflect that. I know results have been the best this season, and we've sort of seen the crowd average just, you know, dip slightly compared to what it was last season. And I'd like to think that we can get a big crowd here for this game.
Yeah, it'd be good to see a lot of people come through the door. I think whilst performances have been good, you know, Davies' first game under the new tenure, it's been 11 years since there's been a new manager at the helm, so it'd be good to see people coming through the door. Clyde, you would like to think they would bring a support. However, the form that they've been on, what they've witnessed as close to Christmas as well, I'm not so sure there'll be a large travelling support, but if you've got a good number of home support behind the lads, certainly think we've got a chance.
Well, the two games last season, the attendance was for both were just under 500. Our average for this season is 536. That's down slightly on last season. That's obviously not taking into account the Aberdeen game where we had obviously over 3,000. So that would obviously take it up a little bit higher, but obviously just with the league games and things like that, it is slightly lower than what it was last season. So, you know, you're probably right. I wouldn't anticipate Clyde taking a massive support. They may just take one or two extra that they maybe wouldn't have done previously because it is such a big game. There is a wee niggling bit of rivalry between the two sets of supporters as well. But you know, I think if we can get 550, 600 as a crowd and get our voices heard for the very first whistle, as you said as well, David Robertson's first game at home. You know, give him the support that he needs as well, and just trying and affect the game as much as possible that we can.
Yeah, I mean, Davies come in at a very difficult time. This is not got to be plain sailing. He's got to need support as well. You know, I think if we can get more people through the doors, granted what we've seen at Balmoor this season has not been good, but, you know, there's a new management team there. We've got to give them the support. I'm fully aware it's very close to Christmas and the weather might play a part on Saturday, but if you are free, get yourself down to Balmoor because, you know, need to understate it. As you said, this is the biggest game we've had all season.
And as you said, there's a few folk that maybe haven't been for a while. We know of people who have stopped going and refused to have gone back while Jim was there. So it's almost like a fresh start for a lot of folks. So the lapsed supporters, if you like, you know, they could be returning. We said before, there's no Premiership FIPA. So anybody that may have been supporting one of the Premiership teams that might have been going there, there's no game for them. So they could come along. There's no World Cup game on the Saturday either, so you know there is plenty of things that there's plenty of reason for you to go if you are that way inclined, because as I said, we cannot overstate how important this game is in getting a bigger crowd as possible into the stadium.
Yeah, you're bang on. This is where I sometimes think clubs throughout Scottish football miss a trick. You know, there has been that 2 week gap. We're aware of how important the game is. Manager's first one as well. Could they have reduced ticket prices to try and get more people through the door? They say that it works all the time. I sometimes think clubs miss a trick now and again. It would have been fine if you could maybe have reduced the tickets by £5. You know, it's one of them. You know, you've got an adult, bring a child along, under 12s for free, whatever. Make that noise. We've complimented the guys behind the goals a few times this season. They do make a noise, they make a bit of a racket, which is good for the atmosphere. But yeah, a lot of things like that. You feel clubs need to try and attract people back. As you said, there was a few folk we came out that weren't going to go back until Jim had gone. That wish has been granted. Jim has now left. There's a new man at the helm, so it'd be good to see a few more people coming back through the door.
Yeah, and as you said, it's. I mean, some folk will maybe wait until near a hand of time, see what the weather's going to bring, first of all. it is a big game, we've built this up as being a big game. We just hope that we get a performance that's going to then match that as well, because there'll be nothing worse, nothing more deflating than having built the game up and then after 20 minutes we're 2-0 down.
Yeah, weirdly I think the referee's going to be crucial on Saturday as well. I don't know, I think the referee appointments have been released yet at the time of recording.
No.
On the Monday night, but I think whoever we get as a referee, we've had a few referees that have been fussy, shall we say. They like to stop start the game. I don't think that's going to suit either team, to be honest. It's good to have a referee that's going to try and let the game flow. So I think the appointment will be crucial as well.
And I'd like to think as well that for the very first whistle that the players are going to be up for it, and we get at them for the get go. Get into their faces and try and make it as difficult as possible. And that first tackle is going to be crucial. Even if it's it's on the halfway line, it's a 50-50. Just try and contest and win as much of those as you can.
It's one of them. Let them know you're there. Mm. Nice early challenge. Yeah, a lot of things like that. I think a strong challenge in the first couple of minutes, get the crowd on side as well. These lot of things kind of be overlooked. They are things that will cheer the crowd on. Little bits and pieces here and there, little kind of things in the corner flag, trying to get fans going. As we've said, it's a game that we can't understate. It's massively important.
Yep, and you can get your tickets online. They're now doing online ticketing. Service, so you can buy your tickets online. You don't have to wait until the game day to get them as well. You can buy them online, just go to the website, peterheadfc.org. And you also get the programme there as well. Match programme is online, digital. I think some people have said that they miss the physical programme, but at least with a digital one, you can sort of download it on your phone or on your laptop, and you've got it if you need it.
Yeah, that's true. There's something quite nostalgic about hitting the programme. Yeah, I think it's one of the things, hey, every club's trying to save money here and there, and printing a paper and the cost of the ink and everything's gone up. But I still think programmes getting set around the ground, that's one of the early memories of football, and you're going, you get a pie and a programme. So, granted, they're a lot dearer now for both items.
Final prediction then for Saturday's game. As we've said, it's a big game. It's a must win. It's really a must win for both sides, I would imagine. But for us, we really need to win this game.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, can't understate it. It is a must win game, like I said, for other reasons I mentioned 5 minutes ago. So I think the team selection, the referee, all these little things will play a part on Saturday. But if you can come off the pitch at 10-5 on Saturday, Kane, and that you've given everything on the pitch, you've given your all, you've done everything you felt you could, you can't ask for much more for the players on that.
Right, joining me now to get a Clyde perspective on Saturday's game from the Clyde FC podcast is none other than Paul. Paul, welcome to the Blue Team podcast. How are you?
Yeah, thanks, Colin. It's good to be on. Feeling quite good about life. It was a weekend without a Clyde defeat. A technical win, we'll call it. A win on points in boxing terms. But yeah, other than that, yeah, life's treating me well. Other than football, it's treating me well.
I should say Merry Christmas and wishing you all the season's greetings. How do you normally celebrate Christmas? What's a normal Christmas like for you?
I'm the host with the most, as they say, Colin. So it'll be me cooking. I normally get a roll of police caution tape that I bought off Amazon in a corner off my kitchen, so nobody comes near me. I'm a bit of a control freak when it comes to that, so it will be myself, all of my family, my wife's family are going to my brothers this year, so slightly less in number, so hopefully I can enjoy myself a bit more and have a few beverages to help pass the day.
Is this something you normally do? Are you quite often in the kitchen, or is this the one time a year thing that you're the only time you're in the kitchen?
No, I do like my cooking. It's my getaway. I'm not going to pretend that I'm some wannabe Jamie Oliver. I mean, I can rustle up a good meal every now and then, but sometimes it's if you're in a bit of a dark headspace, get yourself out and get creative in the kitchen. I quite enjoy that.
I was going to say, considering how bad both our seasons have been, I guess any kind of getting away from football, it would be good. We've sort of danced around the subject long enough now. We should really get on to the game on Saturday. You, as I said, your season just has been as bad as what ours has been. When we spoke about, Martin and myself spoke at the end of last season and the start of this season, we spoke about, looking at the league and how things might go. We did have a concern that buffer, if you like, of the teams that were below us, i.e., your Stranraers, Forfars, Dumbarton, not there anymore. And we were kind of concerned about it. Did you have that kind of lingering kind of feelings going into this season, particularly with the sides that have dropped from the Championship and the sides that have come up from League Two?
100%, Colin. I think we've discussed it many times on our podcast this year that you could probably take the top seven in this league and chuck them into the Championship, and the vast majority of them would fancy the chances of doing something in the Championship this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a testament to how tough a league it is. I would like to say that that's the only issues that we've had. It's just because everyone else has been so much better. And obviously they have, right? The results don't lie. But yeah, as far as that, as you say, the buffer, there's always been one or two clubs, Dumbarton last year, Stranraer, I think it was the year before, that have always went on similar runs to what we are. And you've had that fallback. We don't have that this year, and it's painful for us. We're both in a situation now where the only people that can get ourselves out of it are ourselves, and realistically, it's going to take one or two clubs, but for both to get ourselves out of this without the need of any extra games come May,
mm-hmm.
for another two clubs to have similar horrible runs. It's football, it can happen. It's highly, highly unlikely. So probably for ourselves, even though we're not even at the halfway point, Saturday's game is almost maybe not quite the six-pointer stage just yet, but I think if either of us were to come out on top, it's going to be a big blow for the other. For ourselves, it would mean that obviously we would be rooted to the bottom,
mm-hmm.
And then vice versa, if we were to get a win, whatever the hell that is these days, we would have a 5-point gap. I don't think a point is ideal for either of us.
Yeah.
I think if either of us have got any real hopes of getting out of the bottom two and try and claw back either a Kelty or Queen of South, whoever, because I don't think it's improbable. You look at Airdrie up until, ironically, they came and played us. They were on a horrible run of form. I think they were 5 defeats in the bounce. They were sitting 8th. And if we'd actually beaten them that day, we would have been something mad, like just 4 points behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that wasn't to be. We gave away a late penalty, as is our habit, especially around that time. It's so tough to call. I think it might play out a draw because I think there's so much riding on it for both teams. I really am struggling to pick a winner just now.
You mentioned the horrendous run that you've been on, but you look at the start of the season, it was 7 points out of the first 9, riding high and looking good, and then, what was it, 10 defeats in a row, which resulted in Danny Lennon leaving the club as well. So, you know, how can you go from that sort of early run of that three games to then just not even being able to buy a win?
That's been the question on every Clyde fan's lips. Everyone that works for the club, that volunteers on a match day, everybody. Because those first three games, even if you take the 2-2 draw with yourselves in the season, if it really wasn't for a mad 10 minutes where we were 2-0 up, we were looking like we were going to score a win.
Yeah.
In the same way that we did the Dumfries in the opening day, we were a devastating counter-attacking team at that point. I loved the way we were looking. We were set up with a really good style of play that suited guys like Jordan Allen. We had Ross Cunningham. We also, unfortunately, lost Conor Duffy. He had a quite sizable medical issue, unfortunately. He ended up having to have surgery after the opening day, and he was going to be pivotal to how we were going to be playing thereafter. But, yeah, the first three games, we were looking great. Like, genuinely great. And you thought, yeah, we'll be at least safe this season. Then we went to Montrose and it was a tight game. It was, I'd be hard pushed to say that we deserved a draw, but we could have easily have gotten a draw. Thereafter, it got very, very ugly, very, very quickly. The FC Edinburgh City, I'm not quite sure what they were called that week, game through Meadowbank, it was 2-0, and we created plenty of chances that day, but defensively we were, I think it's fair to say, a shambles. The goals we conceded were playground stuff, to use a cliche, Colin, but you thought, okay, that's a couple of defeats, it's time to see what the team are made of, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And the hardest thing to accept, and it was that some of the results might look, if I take the Airdrie game, you would look at that 5-0 that Airdrie pasted us. But see, if I told you for 65 minutes, albeit we were 1-0 down, we were probably edging that game. Mm-hmm. We were the ones looking likely to score. But for that last 25 minutes, we capitulated in a way that I have not seen ever from a Clyde team. And thereafter, like, you can have no arguments over the result. But there's not been many teams that have had to play fantastic football to beat us at any given time. I would say easily 60-70% of our goals conceded have came from basic individual errors. From giving the ball away, and I'm talking about literally passing two strikers along the back line, that kind of stuff. It's mm-hmm. been beyond frustrating. And for the run that you mentioned, that obviously did lead to Danny and Alan being relieved of their duties, it must have been the worst thing for them, because you can train, obviously, you're two nights a week for us being part-time, and you can set them up and you can tell them what you're looking to do in a match day, but if the execution is as poor as it was, and there just wasn't enough players taking responsibility at the time, and yeah, I think the players would hold their hands up and say that they've definitely sold themselves short, and probably Danny in that run too. Since Jim Duffy's came in, there's been an improvement, certainly initial improvement when you look at the first two results. We scored five, conceded five. Defensively, on paper, it doesn't look like we're getting any better, but two long-range goals in the three-each game with Falkirk, there's not a whole lot you can do about that. Sometimes somebody just strikes a good enough ball. We scored two great goals. And then two penalties that cost us 3 points away at Dunfermline. One of them, yeah, it's just a trip. I've got no complaints with either, but that's just been some of the fine lines where if we had just been able to pick up an extra few points at this stage, it would make it better, we'll yes. say. But there would be at least less pressure on us come Saturday if we had maybe a 5 or 6 point gap. But you'll probably feel the same. from Peterhead matches, maybe where there's been a goal or two in it, that just a break, maybe a decision goes your way and it changes the whole complexion of the actual game itself.
It's interesting, you pick up on one of your points that you made there about teams now having to be fantastic to win games, and we've mentioned that a few times this season where teams are getting out of sort of third gear and still winning games comfortably, and that for us has been really, really frustrating. It's probably been the same for you guys as well.
Yeah, so if I take the two games we played against Inferno, because they were in relatively short window between both, they came to New Douglas Park and they won 2-0, and I highly doubt many of them broke sweat. It was first gear football from them. They had the freedom of the middle of the park. They were free to pass it about at will. It was only 1-0 until the 94th minute or so when they scored in the counter, when we kind of had Neil Parry sitting at the halfway line trying to head our ball back. If ever a goal summed up a season, it was probably that. To then, when we went to East End Park and we were in their faces from kickoff, the two goals were basically just Jordan Allen refusing to give their centre halves a second. And both times, he's out muscled. I can't remember who it was. It wasn't Benedictus. It was another boy, Chambers, or something like that. Turns him and slots away nicely. Another one, he's just chased him down, and it's pressing that we hadn't been doing. Followed that up with Falkirk as well. We conceded early and you thought, oh, well, here we go. It's time to sit and balance my bank account and see how much I can spend on food to make the Saturday night a wee bit better. But no, it was that bite about us again and a bit of organisation that at this level, you know yourself, see if you can just be hard to beat in the first instance. You're going to get points along the way. Mm-hmm. We just have not been hard to beat. We just haven't. And that's the real tough thing to take.
Has there been glimpses of some kind of revival under the new management then? I know it was only there a short period of time, but have you seen anything to give you any slight bit of hope that things might turn around?
Yes, I mean, the two games that I mentioned, the two draws that put an end to the defeats were very, very encouraging. But then a week after with the 3-3 draw with Falkirk, we had the Scottish Cup tie at home to Dumbarton. Now, Dumbarton are top of the league. They're going great guns this year. And we thought, well, this will be a good benchmark as to where we're at just now. And it was everything that we've seen before. It was flat, we didn't get going. There was defensive kind of frailties and mistakes again, and 3-1 probably flattered us, quite frankly, by full time. Now, on the flip side, then we had the SPFL Trust game on Saturday, and Elgin sitting third, I think, in League 2. Albeit, yeah, they've not had as good a season as the Suns, but I thought it was still going to be a real test. You had Kane Hester as well. Boy knows where the net is, and we've been more than generous to strikers this season. So I had my fears. We were a wee bit light on numbers, but we're certainly not shy of injuries just now either, Colin. I know Crimea River, you'll probably be saying, but we are lacking some options, especially up top. So I think we were only down to 14 listed. And there was a few starters. One or two, if you want to say fringe players, I don't think you have fringe players at this level. You've got maybe your 1-11 and then your guys that you need to make a difference. But guys that haven't played a lot of football through one reason or another. Mm-hmm. And then we went down to 10 men for 50 minutes. You do fear the worst, but by all accounts, the boys dug in. I didn't make it up on Saturday, unfortunately, but by all accounts from the people I've spoke to that made the journey, the boys really dug in. and had one or two chances, especially in the first half, but a tough game on a very heavy pitch, given the weather in the area over the couple of days and the build-up to the game. So, if anything, yeah, it's good to get a win, even if it isn't shootout. No injuries, no further injuries at least, and back down the road. And hopefully that's just a wee kind of kick up the backside that the boys needed again, just to steady the ship, because the last couple of weeks, Edinburgh league match as well was horrible. It was a really terrible, terrible performance again, extremely flat. So fingers crossed, my perspective, we'll see a different Clyde on Saturday.
So, what are you expecting from this game? Because obviously, it's the games between the two sides have been really tight in recent seasons. There's so much riding on it. We know we were chatting before, Martin and myself, about how big this game is in terms of our season. A loss for either side, you mentioned, could be devastating. So how do you see this one going, and what would you expect, what kind of game it will be?
Well, Clyde fans, anytime that we see Peterhead on the fixture list, whether it's home or away, we're normally happy with a point, because of our record against Peterhead has been abysmal, especially at Balmour. I mean, I think we've won, since Peterhead came into the league, I think we've only won maybe three or four games in all competitions up there. And two of them, albeit were, yes, in the last 3 years or so, I think we won 2-1 both times, I believe.
Yeah,
we had the one each draw last year, I think. Was it, I think, when Scott Brown possibly scored late in the day?
Yeah,
it was like 93rd minute or something.
The last kind of couple of seasons have kind of merged into one, and I'm thinking there was one of the games where I think you guys had won, scored two sort of worldies in the same game. I think it was,
I think that was in the lockdown season. I remember watching that from my sofa. What did I expect? I expect more from our boys. I think that they need to, first of all, be ready to win their individual battles, which we haven't necessarily done. I do think both squads are better than what the matching league form is showing. And I know people go, oh, that, you're deluded. And maybe I am. Maybe I am, right? I don't know at this stage. But I look at the players that we can put out. I mean, you've got Neil Parry in goals. He's a cracking goalkeeper at this. He's in the twilight of his career, but he's still younger than me, so I'm going to watch what I'm saying here. you've got Brian McLean and Peter Grant, two more than capable centre-halves. Yes, perhaps as mobile as me as well, but more than capable. Peter Grant, I think, in the run as well, didn't deserve to be in some of the scorelines that he was. He's turned into a very, very, very good player for us. More often than not now, captain. We've got plenty of good players in there. We've got the, I think, joint top goal scorer in the league, in Jordan Allen, and we're sitting ninth. So the issues that we have are obvious. It's not up top, it's at back. What do I expect from Peterhead? I expect you're going to come at us, because, yeah, I think you'll probably think that you're feeling fragile, but I don't think you appreciate just how fragile I think Clyde are at the moment. Because, this season could get really, really, really ugly for us after Saturday. And I don't know, as I say, I just don't know how you call it. I know, obviously, from your own perspective, you have brought in quite a lot of players even after the first match between the two, so there's probably going to be four or five players that we haven't actually really been exposed to yet, or know a lot about, other than perhaps any groundwork that the backroom staff have done in advance. So, please don't ask me for a prediction. I really don't know. I really don't know. I really don't know, Colin.
It is really difficult to call, because obviously I'm sitting here and I'm really wanting a win, but you kind of see where a win is coming from, and you're probably in the exact same situation where you want to win, but you just kind of see how a win is going to go. And it might be the scrappiest game, but if we win 1-0, we'll take it, and you'll probably be the same.
Yeah, at this stage, you don't really care how the win comes. I mean, our only win would be Carnarvon Town in the SPFL Trust, 1-0, and it was a 92nd minute Ray Grant goal. But it wasn't even a shot, it was a miss hit cross. And that's the honest truth about it, Colin. It was a miss hit cross that the keeper misjudged, and it bounced in off the post and only just in at the other post. That is probably, I would take that right now. I don't even care if it's a freak goal. I'm hoping for some classic Peterhead wind assisted goals if we could. No, no luck, it'll be a breeze on Saturday. It'll be perfect footballing conditions, but I don't know. I can't call it. I'll say 0-0. It's either going to be 0-0 or about 4-each. I don't think there'll be much in the way of defensive textbook coaching. Mm. Manual stuff from either team comes Saturday.
Well, hopefully it will be as entertaining as you're predicting. Yeah. It will be, whether it be 0-0 or 4-4. It is a massive game, and as I said, we've been pushing it as being the biggest game of the season. But with that, we'll thank you for coming on, Paul. Much appreciated. I know it's kind of crossing enemy lines slightly, but appreciate you coming on and giving us your time.
Anytime. Thank you very much, Colin. All the best for the rest of the season after Saturday.
I was going to say, after Saturday, and I'll wish you well, and wish you a happy Christmas and a prosperous New Year to you and your family.
Thank you very much.
So that is it for another week. We do hope you have enjoyed it. My thanks to Paul from the Clyde FC podcast for joining me, and to Martin Smith for also being here as always. Big thank you to you guys for listening as ever, and please keep your comments coming in. We do appreciate them. It is a huge game on Saturday, so let's make it count and give the manager the best welcome we possibly can. I've been Colin Byers. We'll be back again next week. So until then, stay safe, and we'll see you all again very soon.